Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory West, and on the podcast this week I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
Harry Tremaine.
Hello everyone.
And James E. Mack.
Hello.
Yes, we're all here. So, what we're going to do this week, quite similar to the last week's pod, in that instead of looking at the bottom six like we did last week, we're going to look through the top six teams. The original plan was to sort of look at St Mirren instead of Dun United, but so thankfully the result went their way tonight, and that's jumped them into sixth spot, so they'll be getting a wee mention towards the end of the podcast. But we'll start with Rangers, who sit at the top, pretty much got the title wrapped up. 9 games to play. I think it's fair to say that Celtic aren't catching them. We've said it for a long time. They've had it wrapped up. Celtic have got they're sort of played the same number of games now. The points gap is smaller, but yeah, surely Jamesy, it's over, isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely over. I think we said it months and months ago. You know that massive dip in form they had, and Rangers have just been like stronger. They don't have necessarily, you know, been sweeping teams by in the past couple months. You know, I was looking back at the results. They put all the wins apart from Ross County, I won't count that, have all been by, you know, one goal. They had the draw against Motherwell and then the draw against Sunderland. So it's not like they'll go the season unbeaten. They might, you know, they still could, but you know they are really going for it now. But I think with Europa now, that that'll be the sort of time that we can maybe expect to drop a few more points. But I think the title is all but wrapped up.
Yeah, I think it would be harsh to say that the form has dropped off, considering how consistent the results, or the rate of results they're picking up.
I meant about Celtic dropping form.
Ah, yeah, sure.
That's why.
Yeah. I think there has still been a few questions of their form dropping off a wee bit, but I think it's just the manner of the wins and the odd draw popping up here and there. It's kind of slowed down, and that's kind of be expected, given how intense they played in the first half of the season. It's always going to slow down. You see it across any league around the world, that it's just what happens in football. Players do get a wee bit fatigued, and especially with like the winter break and there's more games to be played in a shorter space of time. It was always going to happen. Jamesy brought up the point of going unbeaten. Hazel, put this one to you. With the main focus now being officially wrapping up the league title, should that be a real sort of landmark to go for, or is it that big a deal?
Well, it's an odd situation in the sense that obviously it's been such a long time since they won a league title. That's the main focus. However, because of the cushion they've kind of built up, which to me, I agree with James, is insurmountable, they might fancy having a go at getting deep into the Europa League, especially with what I would say is a winnable tie against Antwerp. So I don't know if that would impact things in the running, but when you get 29 games into the season and you're unbeaten, of course, that's probably in the back of your mind. Obviously, Celtic did it a couple of years ago, so you kind of want to, from a Rangers perspective, you're probably looking to kind of equal that achievement. It'll definitely be in their minds, but it's just hard to pinpoint a game in which they'll lose. You're probably looking at one of the Old Firm games, but I wouldn't bet against Rangers in any game between now and the end of the season. And even though, as we've kind of alluded to, the goals have dried up a little bit, I think it's positive to see that they can kind of grind out wins as well as just, you know, sweep aside teams with their fullbacks bombing forward and just, you know, completely tearing teams apart from the wide areas. So shown a different dimension to their game as well in recent weeks.
Yeah, I think I've seen a few Rangers supporters say that they're not too concerned about going unbeaten throughout the league season. It's all about getting that league title. But I think once you get to this point, and especially when you look at the home form, winning every single league game, you've got to look at that and think, right, there's an opportunity here to... I'm assuming they've never done it before. I probably should have researched that, but as far as I'm aware, they've never done it. But it's something that would just be a nice little addition. But has mentioned Europe there, Christy. How do you feel they're going to get on against Antwerp? I saw they're second in the Belgian league. At this point, they're in contention for a Champions League spot. I doubt it's going to be an easy game, but Rangers have a pretty decent record in Europe. Do you see them going through?
I would say, yeah, I would fancy them to go through. I think they've probably taken on some better sides in Europe this year. Obviously, they've taken on Belgian opposition, maybe slightly further down the table in standard Liège. I actually think that the performance has almost dropped off. Performance has dropped off, not necessarily the results. Performance has almost dropped off a little bit once the Europa League groups was done. And I was actually anticipating them picking up again a little bit more towards the time where they come back into play Europe. So I don't know if that's maybe something in that. But we've also got to remember about the goals. They have had some of the key forward players missing and key players who contributed to goals. I mean, there's been various times over these past couple of months with injury suspensions that have been missing guys like Kamar Roof, Alfredo Morelos, Scott Arfield as well. I think that Arfield's someone who can offer a lot to them with a bit of tactical flexibility with being able to sort of drift out and play in the wide areas and also be one of the sort of the three central midfielders. And obviously they've had Ryan Jack in and out of the team with injuries as well, so I think they've all made an impact, and it's made a couple of players maybe play some more than Gerrard would have liked to, probably mostly Stephen Davis. So it's kind of understandable that the performances have dropped off. I mean, we've also seen, let's say for instance, like down south, Liverpool last year as runaway league leaders, their performances dropped off towards the end of the season, and I think it'd been a couple of times with Juventus as well in Italy, where they have been very much running away with the title, but they've not quite stumbled over the line. But you know, you've seen the date that they could win it, and it's taken a good few weeks longer to win it. So it's maybe just a case of that, because it's so close that they're almost playing within themselves to make sure that it happens as soon as, you know, the I would say that, you know, they did throw away that game against Hamilton in the last minutes. But I think that I do fancy them in that Europe, and to go on to the point with the unbeaten run in the league, I think once they get it done, if they can get it done in that game against Celtic, I do fancy them to go through unbeaten, because I think once it's done, that'll give them a new lease of life and a new lease of freedom. Right, we've wrapped this up now. Let's go out and play, be really expansive and creative like we were sort of in the kind of September, October, November months of the season.
Yeah, normally you would maybe think after that point it would be a time to maybe give some younger players a chance, but it seems like they're all at house parties, so I doubt they'll be getting any sort of sniff come that time of the season. But I'm really interested to see how they do in Europe. I've said it for a number of years since Gerrard came in, when they're in Europe and they've looked good, I've been desperate for them to draw an English team. And I think even at this point, I think this is probably their best team since Gerrard came in, and obviously it is because they're so far ahead in the league. But I just love to see how they would cope against an English team. I think even if, just thinking of the sides left in it, if they were to get through and draw Spurs, I could easily see them knocking them out, just given how poor they are.
To give you a bit of context on that, obviously Antwerp were in Spurs' group and they beat them in Belgium.
Oh yeah.
Was that not the game where Jose put a picture up of him sitting on the bus?
That was, yeah.
even that was like a bit of a running theme though. After all these European games, it was the one in the snow. I think it was Ludogorets, and it was what training tomorrow, but at 12.
The best one he had. Totally off topic. The best one he had was, I think they were out in Macedonia, and the goal. You noticed that the goal, the height of the goal was, I think it was like 5 millimeters or something, maybe more than that, 5 centimeters shorter than it should have been. So they ended up getting the goalpost replaced, and there's just a picture of him touching the crossbar.
That's a better.
I'd quite enjoy seeing a Jose sort of Instagram post after a trip to Ibrox. Like a fish supper in his lap on the bus, something like that. But I think I would like to see them take on maybe like a big English side or one of the big sides from Spain or Germany, and really test themselves against tough opposition. I know that last year they kind of did get outclassed by Leverkusen, but that was at a time where they had dropped off already. Whereas if they can keep this run of form going, even though obviously since the performances maybe aren't there, if they can keep the results going and keep the momentum going, I'd definitely give them a much better chance against the sort of the level of opposition we're talking about, because they've got that confidence, that belief, bit of swagger. I'd give them a much better chance than they sort of had with Leverkusen last year.
I think just, yeah, to continue the theme of Mourinho's best post is probably the one in his chair in the office. And it's like, I just posing with...
The one he's got a Batman chair?
Yeah, he's got Batman on like the sort of, the sitting side of the chair or whatever, and then on the back it's like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's Game of Thrones, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, Jose Mourinho's Instagram. Definitely worth a look at if you haven't seen it. Anything else on Rangers before we move on?
Or, I don't think so.
I mean, it's worth mentioning about the Scottish Cup if that does go ahead. That would probably be another little nice addition to the season if they were to sort of win that. But I think I've got more to say about another team in the Scottish Cup later on. To be fair, up next, Celtic. Well, we're recording this on Wednesday night, and they have just in the last sort of hour or so beaten Aberdeen 1-0 to make it 5 wins out of their last 5. I think that's 13 goals scored, 2 conceded in those 5 games. James, I'll put this one to you. It's, as we say, it's probably too late in the day now for Celtic, but they are sort of starting to pick up a wee bit of form, and it's just... why now?
It's a good question, to be honest. I think maybe the players finally got that the rocket sort of thing up their ass. You know, I'm not sure. Sometimes these things happen. You know, if you get one win, then you go on and you keep going. They had an absolutely dismal January, but they're sort of making it up in February, sort of thing. But I think maybe playing Killy was probably the best thing for them, to get their first win for this month anyway, and then that's just spurred them on, to be honest. I think they are playing a little bit better, but I think one thing for Celtic is I've watched a couple of the games recently, and they're very cagey until they get their first goal. Like, I think we watched the game today, I think they were very they weren't really motoring all cylinders, sort of thing. Until they get that first goal, and I know that's maybe a bit of a cliche, but I think that's maybe why as well they have struggled. They have not been, if you remember back then when Rodgers had them playing, it was sometimes impossible to even see how any team would break them down. But I think you can see how teams can break them down now. I think defensively they seem a bit sounder now than before. But I think if they can go whole of February on maximum points, I think, second for me is wrapped up. I don't think they're no way going to be overtaken, but I don't think they'll overtake Rangers. So I think, unfortunately for Celtic, they've just got to sort of keep the momentum going and get as many wins on the board, and just so it doesn't look as bad a season as it has been.
Yeah, that's 15 points now. I think they're ahead of Hibs in third, so that's... they'll be fine for a second now. Any sort of doubts about that are long gone. But I was just kind of looking through sort of the run of form this season, and there was a period where they've gone 1-6, another with 1-5, and that's just so far off the standards that they've set in previous seasons, and the standards are also required to win the league. But I don't know if this is just sort of my thinking, but I'll put this one to you, Haz. Are some of these players stepping up their game now because they realise, right, okay, getting closer to the summer transfer window, and a lot of them are going to be looking for moves, and it's just going to give them a better move, essentially.
Yeah, well, however you were going to come to me there, I was going to work in a point about Ozan Edward and his kind of, I mean, he's been on incredible form. I think it's 8 in 7 games now, which obviously takes him by far and away the top goal scorer in the league with 15, which even then, I mean, you maybe could make the case that you expect them to maybe have outscored that. It's still a very good record, obviously 15 and 29, but you've seen this uptick in form from a guy like him, but equally you've seen David Turnbull come into the side more. Well, I mean, he's pretty much cemented his place, and his output's been very good, and obviously I don't think he's going anywhere. So yeah, I think for whatever reason, I mean, I don't want to be too cynical about Edouard, but I wouldn't imagine that he'll be at Celtic next season. But yeah, I think he could be right on that. Equally, obviously now, as Jamesy kind of put it, there is less pressure coming from below them in the league. Obviously, there is a pressure on them to basically win every game between now and the end of the season, but being able to bring in a guy like Welsh at the back and let him properly settle into the team has probably helped them out, and sort of solidified them as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot of different factors there. There probably are guys who are playing for moves, and there are probably guys who are playing for basically their position in the team going forward from this season, because there's no reason that a guy like Welsh couldn't be a regular fixture for Celtic in years to come. You've seen it before with the likes of Tierney, obviously just coming from the academy through into the first team, and then, you know, they're a regular for years, and then who knows what can happen from there. So you never know.
Yeah, I think as much as there are some players that are playing for moves away, there will be a few that are playing for places next season, or instead of being sold off potentially. But Chrissy, what does Celtic have? Let's say the Scottish Cup is played to a conclusion, despite, well, I can't really see it happening, but anyway, let's say it is that, that's obviously the main focus, but would they have any ambition to, I'm sure they would, to stop Rangers going unbeaten? How, if they were to do that, would that be a wee bit of, I don't know, an extra bit of pride at saying, right, okay, we did manage to get a result against them eventually, but is that enough?
Is that included? Was that with the Scottish Cup added in there as well with winning it?
Let's say they go on and win the Scottish Cup.
It will soften the blow, but you know, for Celtic fans, this season was everything. This was the 10 in a row. This was the chance to put themselves ahead. Obviously, but both clubs have done 9 previously, but this was their chance to make records. So I don't think anything will ever make up for this. For some supporters, and they're just a massive failure of this season. But I think for Neil Lennon anyway, with the board sort of upheaval in the summer, I think he needs a Scottish Cup win if he stands any chance of being the manager next season, and you know, a victory, at least one victory, if not two, against Rangers would go a lot towards that, I would feel. I think that with Celtic, I still think that some of the performances haven't quite been there. I don't think they were particularly great tonight. Don't think they were particularly great on Sunday either. You know, they weren't that impressive last week until the sort of the closing stages of the game. So the performances haven't quite been there, even if the results have. And I think it's been more down to, you know, really good bits, individual skill. Think about Sunday, great link-up play between Ryan Christie and Odson Edouard. So I'm still a bit uncertain whether or not this properly is a corner turn for Celtic in this season. But you know, if Harry said it earlier, if it is players who are effectively playing to get moves, and I think you'd probably say Ayer, Edouard, maybe Christie in that. And if they are the ones that are going to get you the results, they are the ones who are going to get you closer, at least closer to Rangers, maybe a victory, and wrap up a Scottish Cup for you, then I'm fair enough. But I see what's coming at the moment from Celtic, it's more really good bits of individual play and individual skill and individual brilliance rather than them looking at a great cohesive team. But at the same time, it's about getting some players out from the team, and I think that they've been improved by Greg Taylor coming in at left back and Sugar Shane Duffy, as he's called in this parish, with them being dropped, and the fact that they've, I don't want to say solved their goalkeeper problem, but I think it's often a bit more not solidity defensively, that they now know that there's a number one. And Scott Bain, now he's obviously not good enough, but I think it's added some confidence to the defence, because they know exactly what to expect every game between now and the end of the season, providing he stays fit.
I'm just going to go around the houses here. Denny, you see Lennon being in charge next season? Because
nope.
there's been a weird sort of noises coming out of Celtic, given that statement that they put out last week, or was it earlier? I think it might have been Monday. And it's just, I don't know. I have this weird feeling that they're going to keep him. I don't know if anyone else agrees.
I would be very surprised. I think, as Christy kind of alluded to, the upheaval at board level, I think, is not good for Neil Lennon going forward. And I just think this season's been so disappointing, but obviously because of what he has done in the past, there is probably a desire to kind of leave things on amicable terms. I just can't see him surviving the summer.
Jamesy, what do you think?
To be honest, I think for Neil Lennon himself, he'll probably walk in the summer, just for, you know, pride purposes, so he's not, you know, sacked. But I think no decisions will be made until the new CEO maybe comes in. You know, as Haz said there about the board, they'll probably want to embed all that in first, and then they'll, because obviously they do have a massive summer coming up, what with the, you know, players potentially leaving, and, you know, trying to get the squad up to understand it, where they will be winning, or if not challenging, a little bit better for the title. So I'll be surprised, but I'm kind of share your thought there, Rory, about he might still be, because the way I read it as well sounded like, you know, he will be there next season, but I genuinely don't think that's good for any party involved for Celtic.
See, I can't see him walking. I think he'll believe that he can turn it around next season and regain the title. And I'm not sure whether an incoming board would look at Lennon and think, right, okay, he's done all right in the past in terms of sort of results, putting aside maybe performances, and think, right, okay, we'll give him another chance. So I don't know, I can see him, but either way, I wouldn't be too surprised.
I'm not sure. I think you look at the how much the fans are sort of, you know, against him. You look at all the things that have been against Lennon throughout the season. I just That's why I think he will walk, or if not, the board will, you know, tell him to go. Because if it did continue into the start of the season, this, you know, the mediocreness that we've seen this season, then that would be a failure almost for that new, well, just, I don't think the chairman or anything's going. I think it's just the CEO, but that would be a failure on their part. So they don't really want to start that kind of tenure on such bad terms. And they want to be coming out this summer, you know, absolutely full strength.
Well, I think I'm fairly certain that he's on 12-month rolling contract, so it's not going to cost you anything to get rid of him. But there's, I agree, I don't think there's no way, and I'm pretty sure he said it himself, he's not going to walk away from that job. I mean, he's going to keep doing it until he's told otherwise, so it's up to the board to make the decision. And if Celtic are a serious football club and want to be a serious club, winning league titles, making the Champions League, they have to look somewhere else, because you can only get so far now with being a sort of a passion merchant manager. And that's what I think of Neil Lennon as. To get into the group stages of the Champions League, to go far in Europe, you need somebody who's a bit more tactically knowledgeable, and somebody who's able to implement proper game plans, and I just don't feel that Neil Lennon is that man. But to be fair, I've never thought Neil Lennon as much of a tactician. So I just don't see any way that the Celtic are going to get to where they want to be with being in Champions League, etc., with Lennon as the manager.
Jurgen Klinsmann, that's who they should go after. He has.
I'm fully on board with that, Rory, I totally agree.
What's he actually up to? Is he even in work at the minute since he left Hertha? Hold on.
Honestly, not sure.
Is he not still on the board at Hertha?
Hold on a second. No, I don't think he is. I think he's out of work, so I don't know. As far as I can see, he's a free man, but yeah, I'm not sure that stint at Hertha would be anything to go by.
No, to be fair, I do think that he's more suited to international football than club football. But
I was kind of saying it in a bit of a joke, to be fair.
Oh, just, were you?
Yeah, I think it would be a pretty mad appointment. But
they have to get the next appointment right, and perhaps that's a bit too much of a risk.
Ralph Raniak, there you go, that's one.
I mean, that would be a great appointment.
But yeah, we'll move on now to Hibs, who are now five clear. No, is it? I've completely forgotten. Is it five or is it four? They're clear.
Four
clear with a game in hand. That's the one of Aberdeen. I think results have definitely picked up since that Betfred Cup semi-final defeat to St Johnstone, aside of the Rangers defeat. Three wins from three, and that's obviously including the comfortable win against Aberdeen, which was so important for both sides to stake their claim for third place. Haz, I'll come to you first. How has Jack Ross turned this around? What's he done to improve Hibs in these last three games?
Well, I'm not entirely sure, other than kind of putting Boyle into a more prominent attacking position. He's kind of shifted him around, but now he's sort of playing as almost as a second striker, certainly against Aberdeen. So I think he's been very important, obviously was very important in the Aberdeen game, which, to be fair, I had pinpointed a few weeks ago as being a key fixture for Jack Ross. Obviously comes out on top. I think that's more or less what it is just kind of getting back to the basics of putting your best players in the most prominent attacking positions. Obviously seems to have kind of dealt with a few in-house issues, you know, regarding players who perhaps were wanting a way in January. And yeah, it seems to have got a unified front towards that end. And yeah, I think that the way it's sitting now looks very pretty for Hibs. Obviously, bitterly disappointing to go out of both of the cups that they've been involved in this season. Or, well, I guess the Scottish Cup was last season. But yeah, I still think, though, that in terms of the league campaign, it's been a very successful season for Hibs. And I think that the way he's kind of shaping his squad with the business that he did do in January bodes well for the future.
Yeah, the main thing I would have pointed to, as you said, there was putting or playing Martin Boyle in a more advanced role. I was never too sure on the sort of shoehorning him into right wing back almost. I think he did a serviceable job there, but I think he offers you so much more. It's almost kind of stating the obvious thing. He offers you so much more in attacking areas of the pitch, but he just wasn't really playing in that sort of areas. And I just think if you look at his goals against, well, his second goal against Aberdeen and the first goal against Dundee United, or his first goal rather, him running in behind, it offers you something so much more different to what Nisbet and Doige offered as a pair, and it's pace is just always and always will be something that's so difficult for defences to deal with, and even more so in Scotland when you've got some big cloggers at the back. Jamesy, what have you made of Hibs in this the last few weeks, especially with them dropping like Kevin Nisbet out of the team?
Yeah, to be honest, I think everything that you have said before has basically been said. As I said, as with you, Rory, I was never really convinced about Boyle on the wing. You know, you watch him a few times and he's always like 10, 15 yards behind, and he's just desperate to be in those final positions, because as you say, when he does get going, he's absolutely brilliant and untouchable. I think he has scored in each of the last few games, I think. So he is doing, you know, he's producing the goods. And I think obviously having Nisbet maybe did throw the toys at the pram a little bit, but you know, that's expected as well. You know, as a footballer, I'm not criticising Nisbet at all, I think, but now he just needs to really be professional. And if he does what his move, he can get it in the summer. You know, I think this is where it'll show himself and Jack Ross what Nisbet's made of now, because he's shown he's a good player, but does he have the attitude to continue that in the latter part of the season? But the Doige and Boyle partnership is looking very good, and I think, to be honest, the way they're going and the fixtures that they have up until the split, I wouldn't really be too surprised. If I might even say it just now, I think third is pretty much guaranteed for them.
I'm just going to make a point, the thing about Nisbet complaining for a move still just infuriates me. He signed a 4-year contract. Like, if you're looking to, you know, kind of be in and out at Hibs, you back yourself to score lots of goals and then immediately get shipped off down south or whatever. Like, don't sign for that long, because now it's gonna be difficult for Hibs to part ways with him unless they're receiving a significant fee.
Yeah, he's played himself out of the team, and now I think, well, he was sat on the top goal scorer in the league for a fair length of time. Now Boyle's only 2 goals behind him, and I just think he was looking through some of Boyle's stats there, and we're only played, I think he's only played 27 games yet so far this season. 9 goals, 5 assists, and I mean 3 league goals are penalties, but still 6 non-penalty goals. It's his best return in the top flight for Hibs, 4 goals and assists. So he's kind of having a pretty decent season, and it's almost gone under the radar a wee bit, given how guys like Boyle were, or Nisbet rather, was the main man. But yeah, I was thinking there when you said that Jamesy wrapped up third, and they've got a reasonably favourable run up until the split, and obviously the split, you're playing tougher games, so it's pretty crucial that if they can pick up, say, close to maximum points in the remaining games, and let's be honest, with the game in hand over Aberdeen as well, it's not as though Aberdeen are coming into those in the run in great form, so I don't think it's too outlandish a shout to say that they will finish third. Then Christy, I'll come to you now. What do you think of that Jamesy's shout there? Do you think they've got third wrapped up, or would you still doubt Hibs's bottle?
I might have to eat some humble pie. And they're undoubtedly the favourites for third position. Regardless, I mean they can be a bit inconsistent, but you've seen much out of them at the moment. And then obviously with Livingston, we're coming in a bit. With losing the last two, they definitely are in full position to hopefully secure that third place. And I would put them down as favourites. They without doubt are the absolute favourites. But on this bit you've mentioned there, he sort of talked his way out of the team. He's possibly even talking about the Euros at the minute. If Murphy, Boyle, and Doige is their sort of their trio, they continue to link so well. I thought that those two were excellent in the game against Aberdeen. If they continue to link so well, then you know why change a winning team? Nisbet might have to just get used to coming off the bench for 15-20 minutes, or maybe coming on to get goals in games that maybe aren't going their way. So you might have to get used to a wee spot on the bench. I also feel for you mentioned about Boyle, right wing back. I think the addition of Chris Cadden has been huge to being able to play him further up the pitch. You looked at for playing that sort of the 3/5 at the back formation, it was kind of between Boyle and Dre Wright for a while. It was the only sort of suitable and viable options, because I think Paul McGinn is a good right back for a back four, but just not got enough going forward and as a wing back. So it was between Boyle and Dre Wright, but with getting Cadden in there, who's a near specialist at the position, it's allowed Boyle to get that lease of freedom to play further forward, so they can get that pace and hit teams in behind that perhaps lack it. So I feel that Cadden coming in has gotten the best out of being able to get Hibs to get the best out of Martin Boyle too.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I was never too convinced on Dre Wright right wing back either. I thought I was a wee bit, again, just shoehorning someone into a favoured system rather than having players that can actually play it. But we'll move on to fourth place now, which is obviously Aberdeen. Right, so all I've got written in my notes for Aberdeen is shite. We've spoken about them in a matter of, or a number of different sort of contexts recently, with the on the pitch stuff and the off the pitch stuff last week as well. I guess probably the first thing we can go to, because I don't really want to pain myself and talk about Aberdeen on the pitch with their record breaking goalless run, despite Jamesy being pretty pleased with that. That's 3 points for a defeat, according to you nowadays, isn't it? But anyway, we'll get on. What I was sort of alluding to, and this is something Jamesy, right up Jamesy's street, is old Dave Cormack making a bit of an arse of it, coming out with his Q&A. I was actually scrolling through his Twitter earlier, and I think I was watching the video of him announcing the Q&A when that was going to happen, or the idea of it anyway, earlier on this year, and It's just funny that I think I didn't watch all of it, but was that the absolute crap video?
That is the absolute crap. That's
what that looks like. Yeah, and his Geely looks like a farmer. But the thoughts on that? I think, well, we've already gone through some thoughts on that in our sort of group chats, but obviously not on the podcast. But Christy, I'll come to you first.
I was going to say, let Jamesy take it first. We sort of know his strong opinions on Mr. Dave.
Yeah. Jamesy,
Fernandez called him.
Yeah, Jamesy, you go for it. Go get stuck into Dave Cormack.
Right, no, I'm just kidding. To be honest, I think there's not really much to say, to be honest.
He said the Q&A
itself, I thought, was a bit.
He said the Q&A was going to be no holds barred, so this is no holds barred. Have a pop.
Yeah, so as I say, the fans are obviously frustrated. He knows they're frustrated. He sees he's obviously quite prominent on Twitter, so he does see a lot of the vocal fans and everything like that. And quite right as well, because what's happening is just now on the pitch is absolutely dreadful. But and then you know. It's the sort of thing you see the new chairman and we're thinking, oh, do you know what, there might actually be some sort of clarity, you know, because he has been talking about the poor financial situation of the club, which didn't help with the £800,000 transfer of Ronald Hernandez, thank you, which we're probably still paying his wage as well, just for that little token there. But then also then he comes out and says he gives the full backing to the manager, fine, and then he goes and cancels the Q&A, which for me, I think he saw the questions, he saw the majority of the questions, and he's pretty much just bottled it. And I think that's, for me, it's where the fans wanted the club to come out with a bit of a backbone, a bit of, clarity on the situation, a bit of guidance, shall we say, where there's obviously, no guidance on the pitch. I've got nothing to say, to be honest. I think he really needs to get his act together for the summer, because this is a massive summer for the club and we'll actually see what he is made of. But I think he just saw a couple of negative questions and he just bottled it. Didn't want to answer any tough questions. That's what my point of it was. I don't think, if you can't handle it, don't do a Q&A. And then he also said him and Robux were going to... meet the fans. I don't think anyone's going to want to meet you face-to-face, because they're going to probably punch you after what's happened this season.
Talk for yourself, Jamesy.
What?
Punching him in the face might be a bit much.
Oh, God.
Oh, Christ, can't say anything nowadays, eh, Harry?
No.
Apologies.
You've completely thrown me there, Jamesy. I don't see... I find it so strange saying, right, okay, the Q&A is going to be no holds barred. And then you're like, okay, no, it's cancelled. Right, okay, well, it clearly wasn't no holds barred. You clearly got a question or two that you disagreed with or probably found too difficult to answer. I mean, there's always going to be questions that are going to be difficult to answer. You could easily just say, like, oh, ran out of time, sorry. Like, couldn't get through them all, we'll do it again in a few months' time, and I don't know, just patch it off then. People probably forget by then. Christy, you always have strong thoughts on Aberdeen. I don't imagine you disagreed too much with Jamesy other than punching Dave Cormack square in the face on those white teeth.
We don't want to break those pearly whites. But I agree a lot with what Jamesy said. I think it was quite ill-advised, because I think had the club not gone and said, right, we are going to do this, and he just sort of used it as a throwaway comment in the Ioni's video, and then he sort of never really followed up on it. I don't think there would have been too much made of it, but it's the fact that, you know, the club's gone and announced it, ask you to submit your questions, and then 2 days before it's meant to happen, he calls it off, and he kind of uses the reason behind the Celtic game allowing the team to do, you know, to go ahead with that without creating loads of headlines. And you think, well, the Celtic game's been in place for months now, so you know, why have you only just thought, right, this, you know, there's going to be loads of headlines about it now? But I think the same as James. I think he's seen the questions. I imagine the vast majority of them are about McInnes and the management team and what's going on the pitch just now. I'd imagine there's a decent number of them about Ronald Hernandez. Of course, there'll be stuff about the financial side, which I think he probably would be prepared to answer. But I think with given his recent public backing of McInnes, I think that it made a lot of those questions difficult to answer. But at the same time, I think he could have easily gone ahead with it and say, right, you know, we're not going to be speaking about him. I've made my stance on the matter clear. You know, we give him our confidence, and we'll review it whenever we see fit. If he did that, fair enough. I don't think too many, obviously a lot of people would complain, but you know, I don't think you can have too many complaints because he's just sort of backing up a stance he took a week or so ago. It's pretty poor that he's backed out of this. I mean, I submitted a question myself asking about, you know, the Aberdeen Youth Academy released something to say that this season over 4,000 minutes had been played by youth team graduates. And I says, well, I think I says to you guys at the time, I'm like, well, over half of them are played by a 34-year-old Andy Considine who came through the youth system 15 years ago. So I'm not sure, you know, using his minutes you know, justifies the success of the current youth academy. I'd quite like to hear if that did come up. I'd quite like to hear his opinion on that, and hopefully we will at some other point. But I've got a feeling that he's going to maybe drop it back in after maybe win a game or two, and kind of hope that
quickly schedule it. We've won.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've won a couple of games. Right, get that Q&A done while everybody's forgotten how bad the rest of the season's been.
We've scraped a 1-0 win through it with a penalty over 7 games when Killy, right, get the YouTube Q&A fired up.
It's almost like the David Brent, go and get the guitar, go and get the Q&A.
Yeah, I can just picture the answer to that question about Andy Constant being like Ben Stiller in Extras when he's talking about like kissing Cameron Diaz, and it's like, yeah, but they were in films. It still counts. Still counts. I think that's a pretty reasonable question, to be fair, because like I remember they subbed on that young boy against Rangers when they were 4 or 5-0 down and made a big deal about it on social media, and the boy's not had a sniff since.
Was that not just probably to deflect from the fact that they've just been
hammered? Yeah. Right, we've kind of went on about Aberdeen a fair bit here. Has, have you got, what's your thoughts on this to round things up?
Yeah, I think if you get to the point where you have to cancel a Q&A because you're scared of some questions about your manager, it kind of points to the fact that you, on some level, you must kind of recognise and agree with a lot of the criticisms that are being made. Obviously, we don't know exactly what's gone into the decision-making with the kind of public backing of the manager and things like that, but yeah, it just seems like a sorry state of affairs. And I mean, it's obviously no better on the pitch. We've barely even talked about that. Obviously no goals in 6 games, really poor. The defensive record is, I mean, obviously a lot worse than
clean sheet on Saturday. Can't complain.
Well, exactly, yeah. But you know, it's please. It's a positive 2-goal difference sitting in fourth. It's just not really good enough for Aberdeen. And I just view this season as, well, obviously from my biased perspective, I'm just kind of looking forward to it being over, to be honest.
But I saw, obviously, someone teaching me, like, that's now 5 wins in 22 games. So, I mean, that's effectively half of the season, and he's got a 23-22% win record. I mean, that's kind of, you've got to say, that's sackable stuff for an Aberdeen manager to go through that, you know, what is basically half a season with that kind of win percentage and the levels of performances, the lack of goals, the defensive unorganisation at times. Because sometimes, I thought tonight, the Aberdeen defence looked relatively okay. Obviously, the goal aside, it was an absolute disaster class from pressing an opposition. But overall, defensively, they looked okay. Again, Saturday, no real issues caused. But the week before against Hibs, they were all over the shop. Again, against Ross County, dreadful. Games against Rangers have been awful. So at times, that defence has been really, really poor. At times, it's been fine. But yeah, it's just... I think it's his worst at this stage. I think the guys in here, we go to that. I think last season, Aberdeen had 3 less points at this stage. So this is sort of his second worst campaign. And to be worse than last year takes some doing. Or to be just in right there.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say as well, me and Jamesy have had a lot of back and forth on many topics actually in recent times, but I would agree on the point that, you know, this sort of PR disaster going on with Dave Cormack is just going to bolster the kind of ill will towards him by, you know, some sections of the fan base. You know, the lack of transparency is just going to alienate people further, and it does no one any good.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out here. So, what is the actual record? I think he's on six wins in the last 19.
But it's five. Is that in the league? Because I think somebody said all comps. I think they included the semi final. So it would be
six wins at nine.
Five wins in 20 for the league.
I think it's six.
Okay.
But if I've got it right, he's won Hamilton, Hibs, Ross County, Killy, St Johnstone, and Motherwell. So I might have got my counting wrong, but if that's the case, even if that's the case, it's what, a 31% or so win ratio.
Like,
that's pretty garbage. But we'll move on. Yeah, we spent enough time on Aberdeen's guff. Now, Jamesy, I'm coming at you first here. Fifth place, Livingston. The wheels have fallen off. Martindale must go. The alarm bells are ringing, surely.
Yeah, I'm not going to bite on that, I'm afraid.
I was only joking. Don't worry.
No, I think, you know, as I say, we knew it was going to happen. I think I did read, I think it was a couple of things about the result on Saturday. And, you know, I think I read the XG was actually higher for Livingston, even though they lost 3-0. I think the lucky thing for Dun United is they've got Sigrist. I think he's got a different keeper. I think maybe it is something that Livingston had, issues with earlier on in the season, was actually finishing off chances, like getting into good positions. You know, it's all fine and well, but if you can't, finish it off. And I think I read maybe Robinson might miss the cup final as well. But I think, as Harry was hoping for, a couple of losses and see what they're made of. And I think there's probably no better test than the next two games coming up for Livingston now, away to St Mirren, and then they've got the cup final to look forward to. So, to be honest, I think they just need to keep doing what they're doing. I don't think there's any cause for it. Well, to be honest, I don't think there was much expectation for Livingston to be any, you know, Dave Martindale said he wanted them to be a top six side, and that was all he was looking at. You know, everyone was hyping up about, you know, going for Europe and everything, and, you know, that's all fine and well. But I think if they can come into the split with probably maximum points, and I think they'll be very happy. I think it's, since he's come in, it's been a very positive turnaround, and we're probably seeing that sort of Livingston that we saw when they first came into the Premiership. And, you know, it's I've got a big soft spot for Livingston, so it's good to see that. And, you know, I think for them now, they've just really got to put on the pressure for Aberdeen, because, you know, we said it before, why can't they be, you know, pressing for it? They've got no expectations on them. They can actually, you know, all the burden is now on Aberdeen. Okay, there's only 5 points for them going into the bottom six, but I think they've got enough about them to you know, be very secure in the top six, and if they can put a bit of pressure on for the European places.
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple of poor results, but they are still 6 points behind Aberdeen with a game in hand. So, again, as we mentioned with Hibs and Aberdeen's form, it's not totally out of the question. But has what have you got to say about Livingston? And maybe Jamesy?
Oh, to be fair, I'm not going to laud over anybody and, you know, Livingston as a team that they lost two games. Obviously, you know, there's mitigating factors, although the one thing I would say is about your XG comment in that game against Dundee United. I mean, to be fair, they were playing 30 minutes of that game with a man extra on the pitch, so you'd expect them to exert a bit of dominance at some point there. And ultimately, to be fair, in that game, especially for the last goal, the defending was really poor, really disorganised. Which, in fairness again to Livingston and Martindale, they haven't really shown that in his tenure previous to that. So, yeah, it's questions being asked again for the first time in his tenure. And I think that's what I've always pointed to, you know, when the results turn, because, of course, they would at some point. How will they respond? And as Jamesy said, I do agree. I think the next couple of games are massive, because ultimately, if they lose to St Mirren, they end up kind of getting dragged further down. You know, St Mirren and themselves will be jostling for fifth rather than kind of looking at above themselves. So, yeah, it's a big period of the season. And again, I think the wider point about Martindale is probably looking towards next season. That's where my main concern comes. But yeah, of course, like, you know, they're overachieving no matter what way you look at it. To be in fifth position at this stage in the season, you have to give them credit for that. But yeah, obviously it could potentially be ominous for the future, and these couple of games are a signpost of that.
I did note that Saturday was the biggest sort of shot on target percentage this season, which, I mean, it can sort of hint to one or two things, whether it's pretty poor finishing or Sigrist has had a pretty decent game. But I think there's still a lot riding on this cup final, obviously, and if Livingston were to lose it, then a lot of the sort of good work's just kind of been thrown away. It was almost got to that point when they won the semi-final. I don't know, I just kind of assumed a lot of people were, or thought a lot of people were assuming they were just going to win it comfortably, and now I don't know whether they've maybe got these sort of poor results and poor performances out of their system, so Martindale can maybe fix a few of the problems that might have been appearing but nobody's really taken advantage of. But what are you thinking on Livingston, Christy?
I agree with Harry there. I think that we always said that what happens after a bad result or a bad run will be the true test of David Martindale as a manager. I think it's possibly come at a bad time for him, with just being just before a cup final. It's crucial to get that result on Saturday. It'll keep them well clear of St Mirren and more or less confirm a spot in the top six. Not that I think it's under any threat, but it was uncharacteristically bad kind of defending from Livingston on Saturday. It's something that we've not seen at all from them really since David Martindale came in. Never once thought that they looked particularly bad at the back. There's going to be a mistake for one of the goals that Celtic scored in the 2-2, but nothing more than that. So it's an interesting one, and I think it's the longer this sort of bad run goes on. Let's say they don't win against St Mirren and then they lose the cup final, I think Harry will be further begin to doubt Martindale, and will firmly put it down as a honeymoon period, which I'm sure that Jamesy would very much disagree with. But it's I think that we'll find out a lot about this team and David Martindale in the next two games, which are, like I said, coming up. They are huge, and to be fair, there's no real bigger game than a cup final. But like you said, I don't know why people automatically pin them down as favourites. Maybe it's just because of that run that they've gone on. But listen, obviously with last week as well, so St Johnstone can really hurt them. And St Johnstone are particularly dangerous from set pieces, where surprisingly, you think about the height in the Livingston team, and you think about how well organised they are. Livingston have one of the sort of the worst records in the league for defending set pieces. So might need to get that a little bit in order and do a fair bit of training on that before the cup final. Obviously, I think St Johnstone hit them with one in the game last week. So I do think that it is a case of let's see after these two games where Livingston are, and then you know we can begin to get a better picture of David Martindale as a manager.
Just to correct something you said, there is a bigger game than a cup final. That's the semi-final. Just ask Derek McInnes.
I was going to say, I was like, please tell me, like, I've just not said some amount of shite, and then, let's just have a pop at Derek McInnes, that's fine.
One for the trophy cabinet. Right, okay, we'll finish off with St Mirren, who, as we mentioned at the start, have creeped into the top six, but I think... even though Dundee United they've still got a game in hand over Dundee United, I still think regardless they're probably more deserving of a top six spot, given their sort of the way they've played the season than United. As we've kind of mentioned throughout the season, that Dundee United's place in the top six was a wee bit of a false position, but I think kind of more for St Mirren we're going to focus on the extension of Jim Goodwin's contract until 2024. I think we'd all probably agree that since he came in last season he's done a pretty good job, and especially this season, aside from the semi-final where I don't think they did themselves justice, he's given St Mirren a bit of an identity, and I think it just gives the club a wee bit of stability that they maybe didn't have in the sort of the rough year after Jack Ross left, when they had that electrifying four-game stint of Alan Stubbs, and then the probably less electrifying Oran Kearney, despite his love of Guinness, that he let everyone know after that pen shootout against Dundee United. But it works two ways for me, is that, right, okay, you've either got Goodwin until 2024, which is a long way away from now, and if not, then if a club's going to come in for him, there's a decent bit of compensation that St Mirren are going to be due. So great stuff all round for St Mirren, if you ask me.
I would probably agree. The only thing I would say is it seems an odd time to sort of to announce that he's going to be your best paid manager of all time, given current circumstances, but I think it should hopefully be a good piece of business. I mean, the job he's done at St Mirren to date has been pretty good. I think that he inherited a basket case, to be honest, last summer. That the squad he inherited coming in should have got relegated. He managed to make some decent signings, especially in January, with guys like Jamie McGrath and Conor McCarthy at the back. I think that they were huge in keeping St Mirren afloat. But this year he's managed to build on that. He's made them a bit more expansive, a bit more exciting. I still feel that they obviously lack goals, which probably doesn't help given that they currently are without three first-team strikers. With injury, Brophy's out for the season, and Christian Dennis is out for a while, and that guy who I can never remember his name, but I know he played for Huddersfield, He's out as well.
I've no idea how to pronounce his name, but I know exactly who he is.
Haz is the man for that.
I think it's Kwaner, but...
Yeah.
Colin Kwaner, isn't it?
Just big Colin, that would be. Colin Cassidy.
I thought he's a questionable signing given that he's sort of never been fit. So they're still, they still lack goals. I think he's built a good, solid defensive unit. Some nice players in midfield. Doyle Hayes, I like him. I like, this is like McGrath, I like McCarthy. I like Ethan Erawan. I like Connolly Wayne. I quite like Ilkay Durmus. It seems there's a lot of players that I do quite like in their team. So I think he's built a good squad. Could do adding a bit more clinical strikers up front. Maybe that's a job for this summer. But he's slowly built a really decent team. And if he can get St Mirren into the top six, which is something that they've never actually done since they brought in this sort of this split, they've never made the top six. If they can do that, then maybe he does sort of deserve that honour of being the highest paid manager in St Mirren's history. But I think he said the only blot against his sort of CV this year has been that semi final where they let themselves down a bit. I felt that he set up to be quite cagey, set up quite negatively, and once Livingston got their nose in front, they just kept St Mirren at an arm's length and basically saw out the game from 10 minutes in. But I've been impressed with Jim Goodwin, and I think that he's probably someone who has a future, maybe somewhere a bit bigger than St Mirren.
I guess to your point about a clinical striker, they did obviously bring in Brophy, so see what he does next season.
I wouldn't say he's a clinical forward.
Clinical for that level, I guess, if he can reproduce what he did at Killy. Double figures is what you're after, and he's done that a couple of times.
I think at some point you'd be happy with a 1-in-3 striker. I think somebody who's going to get you 12, 13, 14 goals a season, and maybe someone else to chip in with sort of 7 or 8. I think you'd be happy with that. Obviously, as you go further up the league, you need to score more goals. You look at going a bit further up to sort of an Aberdeen Young striker, you're looking at a 1-in-2 Celtic and Rangers. You are definitely for that guy who's going to score 25 goals a season.
Jamesy, your namesake, James Goodwin, whatever he was christened. How do you summarise what his work at St Mirren so far?
Do you know what I think? And every time I see, St Mirren playing well or scoring or winning, I just think back to when their chairman came out and said, we're gonna make this a top six side, and everyone laughed.
Everyone
thought it was beyond them. I think I'm myself included. I think they definitely deserve to be where they should be, but I think at the moment their form hasn't been amazing either. I think they've only got a couple of wins in the last, I think it's 7 or 8 games, to be honest. So I think if they can manage to get a few of the draws into wins, then they should again hopefully get the top six spot comfortably over Dundee United. But I think they're fully deserved to be where they are. I think they recruited well. I said in the summer I thought they recruited well. Obviously not all of them turned out to be amazing signings, but as I say, I think they're a very difficult team to play against. Nobody really enjoys playing against them, and I think that's all credit to Jim Goodwin, as you say. I think everything that's been said, he's the guy that said it.
3 wins in 10, that's what they're on at the minute, so I mean, it's better than Aberdeen, so there's one thing for you. Has to kind of finish off St Mirren, how do you judge their season so far?
Well, I think everything at St Mirren is geared towards, sometimes it feels like very gradual improvement. Obviously at times it's felt like a bigger leap than that. Obviously to go from where they were last season to be a top six side is obviously a pretty significant jump. I think a lot of it as well, you know, the announcement of the largest player budget and him being the highest paid manager in St. Mirren's history, obviously, yes, it kind of feels a bit odd with the current circumstances with the pandemic, but it also just points to this kind of ambition that St. Mirren have shown to improve. Obviously, if you think back to the chief executive, his comments, he actually at one point said he viewed them as a top four club, which obviously is a fair bit off in terms of the points gap. But yeah, they're making the right strides in that direction. One thing I do like about Goodwin is that he's improved a lot of these younger players in his squad. Kyle McAllister, he's got a healthy number of assists to his game. Jamie McGrath, still a young guy, and obviously he's added plenty of goals from midfield. Doyle Hayes, Urahan as well. So I think there's a lot of things that bode well. He's building a good squad. And yeah, definitely moving in the right direction. The other thing I like as well with the announcement of his new deal, he actually was talking about winning silverware in the next 3 years, which again, very ambitious. Obviously, it's going to be difficult. You know, those trophies have been, well, under a stranglehold in recent times by other clubs, obviously up until this season. But yeah, I really like the overall feeling. I think there's a really feel-good atmosphere around St. Mirren at the moment. I think the one thing that will actually do him a decent favour is actually the experience of that semi-final where, I mean, to be fair, yeah, it will be his first experience in that position, as it was for Martindale, but he can take the lessons from that moving forward and probably look to correct them in the future.
Well, Scott, Derek McInnes, a job for 8 years, so surely no harm done. I just couldn't resist myself, but just another dig at him. But anyway, I guess we'll round things off there. Next week, with it being, bloody hell, 5 years to almost the day, I think when we're planning on recording, since we started the pod, we're going to do a wee sort of look back and put ourselves back into our shoes in 2016 and look at some things we just wouldn't expect to have happened in Scottish football in those 5 years. But until then, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.